You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
The process of colonizing the Western Hemisphere began just over 500 years ago, and we are all living on land that's been conquered. In the area called British Columbia, no treaties were made with the indigenous nations that were already here when the Europeans arrived. Instead, a policy of assimilation has been carried out in an attempt to wipe out the indigenous nations. Carrie Coast is a journalist and activist, having written for the BC Treaty Negotiating Times for 3 years, and she's also been a three-time representative at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Her new book, The Colonial Present, has just been published from Clarity Press, and Carrie joins us on the phone. Hello, Carrie.
Hi, good morning, James.
Now, first of all, the full title of your book is called The Colonial Present, The Rule of Ignorance and the Role of Law in British Columbia. And I would like to start there. What do you mean by the colonial present?
Okay, sure. Yeah, it has a long title, so let's start with the short title first. In British Columbia, people and scholars and academics talk about the colonial period, and they refer to something which was happening in the 19th century. My opinion of what's happening is that we've never actually left the colonial period, and that even today, we're in a colonial moment. So, for example, something that happens with astonishing regularity in British Columbia is that the Ministry of Children and Families seizes Indigenous children from their homes and families from their parents. And they do that with police officers, and they take the children away and place them in other foster care. And I would say that that is not a post-colonial act. That is a colonial act. Our society is still in the process of attempting to disassemble Indigenous peoples. And another thing which is a colonial act is that these days, if Indigenous people go out on their land and they attempt to stop development of some sacred place or even a burial ground, they're arrested and they're hauled away to jail. This is not a post-colonial act. We're in British Columbia, the government has never treated with Indigenous nations. It's never bought land from them or even come to any arrangement by which we could share it. And so today we're very much involved in a whole series of colonial tasks, which is still attempting to colonize Indigenous peoples.
And of course, one of the best known, but on the other hand, least known colonial acts, I would guess, in the recent history is the Gustavson Lake standoff back in 1995. Can you remind us what happened during that standoff?
Sure, briefly, and I would just put that in context. So one of the tasks of colonization right at the moment is actually attempting to entice or coerce Indigenous peoples to give up their title to the land. And the process that we're seeing right now most in action is the British Columbia treaty process, which happens under the BC Treaty Commission. In 1995, it had become really clear that the only kind of negotiation going on in BC was the BC treaty process kind, which results in extinguishment. When you sign a BC treaty, you extinguish yourself. There's no more Indian band. There's no more lands reserved for the Indians. There's no more Indian status, well, in name only. So in 1995, it was the fourth year, I think, of a Sundance, which was happening in Shuswap country, Shuswapmuc country at Gustavson Lake. And people were asserting their obvious right to carry out the Sundance in that place as they had done before and as it was their wish to do so. But British Columbia got behind a cattle rancher who had a cattle grazing lease in that area, and they decided that it was more important for Lyle James to be able to have his cattle run around on that area than it was to respect the activities of the Sundancers, the Shuswapmuc Sundancers, who were practicing their spiritual ceremony there. The Sundancers had put up a fence around their sacred arbor to keep the free-range cows out of it. And talks broke down predictably. We know now that the whole event was somewhat anticipated by the RCMP. So peaceful talks to ask the Sundancers to leave the area or take down the fence failed because the RCMP didn't want them to succeed, obviously. They surrounded the camp of a couple dozen Sundancers with 300 to 400 police officers. This was in August, after the Sundancers had been provoked and shot at and threatened with hanging and things like this by Lyle James and his cowboys. And so what ensued was that the Sundancers were surrounded. They were labeled terrorists. We saw Ujjal Dasenj, the Minister of Human Rights and the Attorney General at the time, gave a green light to shoot to kill these people, these Sundancers. We had Premier Mike Harcourt saying these people are terrorists, which which they weren't. They were practicing a Sundance. So 77,000 rounds of ammunition was fired on the camp, attempting to make them give in and make them leave. And this lasted for several weeks. Only one person was hurt, at least only one of the people in the Sundance camps was hurt. The cops were firing at two people fleeing, and they had their hands over their heads as they were running away, and this woman was shot in the bicep, so you can see where the cops were aiming. At any rate, they all survived that. They were thrown in jail afterwards. They were told that they would be treated with respect and that their issues about their right to use their land, their unsurrendered land, they were told that those issues would be addressed, but of course they weren't. That was a lie, and several people spent several years in jail after that. That was Gustafson Lake in 1995. Very short version.
Now, I'm wondering, because I phrased the question saying it's known and not so well known. I'm thinking personally, I remember there was an incident, but I don't know that much about it, which kind of brings me to the second part of the title of your book about the role of ignorance. Can you tell me, you know, how does that play into the treaty process? What role does the ignorance play?
Sure. Well, the Gustafson Lake siege, the event there, is one of the examples that I use in the book to illustrate the way the mainstream media completely obscures the issues around Indigenous title and the unceded nature of their lands. I argue in the book that you will never really properly understand the legal situation in British Columbia by relying on the mainstream media or your public school education, or even your post-secondary education, for that matter. And I criticize a lot of the First Nations studies professors in British Columbia failing to honestly address the issues. So the second part of the title of the book is The Rule of Ignorance and the Role of Law in British Columbia. And what that means is that while people tend to think we're a rule of law society, which means that we do things and base government action and policy on laws, on the existing laws, I'd say that we don't do that at all. Canada's constitution and Canada generally requires, and international law requires, that you can't just move onto someone's territory and take their kids away and force them to live on reserves on pain of criminalization or death. And you can't do that. And Canada's constitution says you can't do that. But we're not a rule of law society. And instead, the law and legislation and police officers who enforce judge-made decisions are only playing a role in continuing the highly illegal colonization of Indigenous peoples and their lands and territories here in British Columbia. But the rule really is of ignorance, which is that I suggest and I argue that most British Columbians really do not understand the present-day legal issues, and they don't understand, they certainly don't understand the history, and that is the rule. And it is only because British Columbians are so ignorant and have been made so ignorant by our education system and media, it's only because of that ignorance that the incredible injustice which happens in British Columbia can actually carry on because people really aren't equipped to apprehend the problems and the human rights abuses and the invasion of the territories which is going on. They just don't have the right information or about the law and about the events which are actually happening, such as at Gustavson Lake, which was completely misreported. The RCMP herded all the journalists and reporters into a room and told them what to say during Gustavson Lake.
Now, one of the things I read about in your book I found particularly interesting was about Canada's adoption of the United Nations Genocide Convention. I believe that was ratified back in 1948. Can you tell us, first of all, what that Genocide Convention was?
Yes, and what it is.
Yeah.
Certainly. I think what you're getting at is that there is an international convention which defines genocide as any of five types of activities, and that those activities are explicitly illegal, and that no state may carry on those five activities against anyone, any people. So the convention was never actually made operable in international law by any kind of committee or any kind of monitoring program whereby states have to report on whether they are involved in genocidal activities or not. It was never made operable in the international legal arena. Instead, what happened is that member states of the United Nations were expected to bring back those five criminal activities which constitute genocide and incorporate those in their criminal code domestically within their country so that no one within their country could commit an act of genocide or they could be tried against it because those activities would be identified in the nation's criminal code. What Canada did is that it brought back two of the five types of activities which constitute genocide and incorporated those in its criminal code, and then it altered a third activity, altered the definition of a third activity, and left the other two completely out of the criminal code. So that effectively, Indigenous people can't appeal to the Canadian criminal code and sue them for genocide because there's no prohibition on those genocidal acts under the criminal code of Canada. And so the genocidal acts, according to the UN Convention of 1948, are, and I'll just briefly sum them up. One is that you can't take people's kids away. Another is that you can't forcibly remove people from where they live and make them go somewhere else. Another one is causing mental and physical harm or killing members of the group. So killing people because they are a member of that group. And certainly we know a lot of Native people in British Columbia have been killed because they're Native. I don't have to go much further than the Missing Women Inquiry or the Frank Paul Inquiry. And I number a bunch of, several people who have been tragically killed because they were Native in the book. And so those are the genocidal activities which are illegal, and there's a couple more, but just for time's sake, I'll leave it at that and point out that Canada has not incorporated those things into its criminal code. So domestically, Indigenous people have very little recourse. That's why we're seeing people going to things like the UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues, and that's why they're going to the Organization of American States Human Rights Commission, and they're looking outside because there are no options for Indigenous peoples within Canada legally to get to have recourse or to get justice.
This entire process, who basically is benefiting from this? Who is BC working for, I suppose you could say?
Well, it certainly starts with British Columbians. I mean, all of us who are not Indigenous and who live in BC, we're benefiting. We're using the land where our government collects taxes on resource extraction. We're making money off selling timber and minerals and salmon. So we are certainly benefiting. All 4 million non-Native people living in British Columbia are here and living at the expense of the people whose lands it's on, who've never been compensated or anything. Obviously, there's certainly third parties who benefit. They rely on British Columbia and Canada's denial of Indigenous title. They rely on Canada and BC's denial of Indigenous human rights and their right to self-determination in order to access the resources which are here in Indigenous territories.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your time, and I certainly urge everyone to go out and get your book.
Thanks. Yes, it's on Amazon, The Colonial Present.
Great,
thanks very much, James.
All right. Well, I've been speaking to Carrie Coast. She's a journalist, dramatist, and an activist. She's just returned from New York, where she served as a representative of the International Human Rights Association of American Minorities at the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Her new book, The Colonial Present, is available from Clarity Press, and their website is claritypress.com.